Okay. Oh, Rishus, Rabbi Center, and Rishus, my brother-in-law, Rabbi Gordon. I want to thank Rabbi Gordon for inviting me to speak. And I would also like to take this opportunity to wish him a public Yayasha Kochicha for everything that he does, not only for his share every day, but also for the whole Shem and Lamaor program. I know that he spent a long time making the booklets and arranging everything, so I think he deserves an enormous Yayasha Kochicha. If Hanukkah was just an event which happened about 2,500 years ago, so then Chazal wouldn't have been misaking for us to be doing something even today. It must be that there is something which Chazal saw then that we would need to be doing now. There must be some avodah, some koach in this time of year that we can tap into and that we need to tap into now. And I wanted to try for the next few minutes just to explore a little bit what that is. There must be some battle that we have with the Yevonim still today, and that Hanukkah is a celebration of, and it's a hisorus to overcome this battle that we have with the Yevonim and define ourselves as the Yehudim, as the Sheshanim. I'd like to start with a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. And the Mishnah, when we first read it, is extremely perplexing, because the Mishnah says, Ein lecha ben chorin, elo mi she'osek b'Torah. There's no one who's really considered ben chayrin, a free man, unless he's oseik b'Torah, unless he's learning Torah. Now, when we first read that Mishnah, it seems to be totally confusing. Because if there is any adjective that we could describe someone who's learning Torah with, it wouldn't be free. Maybe he's a tzaddik. You only have a tzaddik if he's oseik in Torah, a chassid, someone who's doing something which is amudo shel olam. But to say that he's free, that doesn't really make sense, because everyone knows that someone who's learning Torah is not free. He has to daven shacharis in the morning, he has to put on tefillin. When it's hot outside, he still has to be wearing his tzitzis. He can't take his phone out on Shabbos, chas v'shalom, and he can't eat treif. So he's not free. He can't do what he wants. It's not a bad thing that he's learning Torah. It's not a bad thing that he's not free. But we wouldn't call that ben chayrin. We wouldn't call that free. So we need to understand, what were Chazal telling us when they said Ein lecha ben chorin, the definition of a free person is someone who's learning Torah, when it seems hafuch? A person who's learning Torah is someone who's subjugating himself to a set of rules. So why is it that we call him free? And I'd like to share with you an unbelievable idea that I first heard from the ex-chief rabbi, Rabbi Sachs. And he said as follows. He said that if we want to understand this Mishnah, we need to understand this language of ben chayrin, someone who's free. He said this comes from the word chayrus, freedom, which we use when it comes to Pesach. We say Pesach is zman chayrusenu, the time of our freedom. He says, but where in the Torah does this word chayrus come up? And if you look in any of the places where you would have thought that the word chayrus comes up, it doesn't come up. Pesach, it doesn't come up. If you think when you free your Eved Ivri or you free an Eved Kanani, you would think it would say the word Chayrus, freedom, but it doesn't say that. It says a different word. It says Lachofshi Yishalchenu. You should send him Lachofshi from the word Chofesh, like a holiday. Send him for free. Send him out. So where do we see this word Chayrus in the Torah? He says there's one example of the word Chayrus, and it comes up when it describes how Hashem writes the Aseres HaDibros on the Luchos. It says they were Chorus on the Luchos. They were Chorus. Chorus meaning engraved. And this just compounds our difficulties. Because what does engraving have to do with freedom? We know that in Lashon HaKodesh, the words themselves accurately describe the essence of the item that they're describing. And therefore, if the word Chorus means freedom and the word Chorus means engraving, it must mean they're connected. But how? And so he said as follows. He said there's two ways that a person can write something down. He said, way number one is called ink on parchment. Okay, we'll explain it in a moment. And the other way is engraving. You can do ink on parchment, meaning you can take a pen or a quill and you can write down on a piece of paper or parchment, you can write something down. But the ink itself is just sitting on top of the parchment. It doesn't change the parchment at all. However, when you engrave into something, you take a formless slab of rock. Take the Luchos, for example, a formless slab of rock, and you engrave into it some words, and you make it into something. When you engrave, you change the actual substance itself, the actual rock itself. So you have ink on parchment, and you have engraving. He says there's two ways that you can have a system of rules. You can have rules that are just slapped on a person just like that. You have to do this then, you have to do that then, and you have to do X on another occasion. That is ink on parchment type rules. The ink doesn't affect the parchment, and the rules don't affect the people who they bind. However, if you have a different set of rules, you can have another set of rules which are like engraving. What does that mean? That means that you have something which has no form, it's just a slab of rock. You give it rules in the form of engraving, and you change it, and you form it, and you mold it into something better. So for example, if you take any kind of sports game, if you take out the rules of the game, yeah, the game is no longer the game. Yeah, because the rules, they define the game, they make the game into what it is. He says this can help us explain what Hashem was doing when he engraved the Aseres HaDibros on the Luchos. He told us that when I'm giving you these rules, I don't want these rules to be like any kind of laws that you have to keep in any other country. These aren't rules that are ink on parchment. These are rules which are chorus. These are engraved into the Luchos. I want these rules to engrave you. I want them to form you into who you're supposed to be. And if a person has these kind of rules, this makes a person into who he wants to be, or into the ultimate him. And therefore, explains Rabbi Sacks, he says there's two types of freedom that we have. We have freedom where we call it, in another word in English for it, is liberty, where you have the ability to choose what you want to do. I can do this, I can do that. And in Hebrew, we call that chofshi. We call that on chofesh, on holiday, where you don't have a boss, there's no one telling you to do this or to do that. But it just means you have the ability to choose what you want to do. But there's a much deeper kind of freedom. And this is the freedom that we use the word chorus to describe. And this freedom is a freedom to be the ultimate you. And that requires engraving. That requires a certain set of parameters that will take you from being something which is formless, just a slab of rock, and will turn us into a sculpture, will turn us into something which is engraved, to give us form, to make us into who we are. And Hashem says, this is what I want the Torah to be. Okay, we have to answer, why do we also have Sifrei Torah, which are ink on parchment? That's another topic. But when Hashem gave us the Torah, he said, I want this to be for you, to be engraving. I want the laws of the Torah to make you into the ultimate you. Now, really, we need a much longer time period to describe how this works. How does it work? We need to understand deeply what is Torah, and we need to understand who we are, and then we can understand how the Torah makes us into the ultimate us. However, we don't really have time for all of that now, so we're just going to try and touch the surface a little bit on who we are and try to understand it through this and link it back into Hanukkah. When we die, what happens is that we have a split between neshama and guf. Yeah, the neshama goes up to the heaven, and we have our guf, which is buried in the ground. And this is really the sort, they go back to where they came from. The guf is part of the adama, the physical world, and the neshama is from a spiritual, infinite place, which is far beyond this world. When we're alive, that means the definition of us being alive means our guf and our neshama are connected. What is our neshama? Our neshama is really a chilek elokam mimal. It's an aspect of Hashem that Hashem wanted us to express in the world. And really, a neshama, something which is spiritual, something which is beyond the physical realm, should not be able to exist in the physical world. Hashem made a system whereby he connected the neshama to the guf, and he allowed us to express our neshama into the world by connecting it to a guf. If you want a good moshul, think about it as software and hardware. Let's say you have a program like Microsoft Word, or you have Otsar Chachma. Really, as software, it doesn't really exist. It's just software. Only once you have a screen which allows you to allows this software to be manifest, once you have the hardware, then suddenly you can have these programs existing in the world. So too with the neshama and the guf. Really, the neshama should not be able to exist in this world. However, with the hardware of the guf allows us to express the neshama into the world. We can suddenly bring the neshama into the world. And every time we perform a mitzvah, and every time we learn more Torah, we're allowing our neshama to control and to flow through the guf and to express itself and that aspect of Hashem into the world. So therefore, every time you do an aveira, the converse is also true, every time you do an aveira. So we're saying that voice of the neshama, that spiritual, infinite aspect which is within us, that is not able to express itself in the world because it says do this, and we say, nah, we're not going to do that, we're going to do something else. That's the that's the struggle between the neshama and the guf. And every time we listen to the voice of the neshama, we're allowing it to express itself into the world. The Torah is the guideline, is the book, the set of engraving laws that allow us to listen to that voice of the neshama. It guides us and tells us, this is how to allow your neshama to float into the world. Follow the laws of the Torah. The Torah itself at the beginning in Parshas Bereishis says, what is the Torah? It says, Zeh Sefer Toldos HaAdam. This book is a book of the Toldos HaAdam, of how to be the ultimate human being. If you follow the guidelines of this book, this is how you can be a human being. And the Greeks, what we have on Hanukkah, the Greeks tell us the whole time, focus on the body, focus on the guf. Yeah, let's have an Olympics and show what the guf can do. But they're ignoring the fact that actually the ultimate us, what we really are, is the software. We really are the neshama, which is behind that. Our whole task, our whole tafkid in this world is to let that neshama float through and listen to that voice of the neshama and allow it to express itself in the world. And the Greeks, the whole purpose of beautifying the guf is to say that actually that's all there is. There's guf. Our role is to say, no, there's neshama, there's more to it, there's more significance. Our guf is just a way of allowing the neshama to express itself in the world. When we learn the Torah, when we access the Torah, we're able to allow ourselves to focus on what is the real us. It brings out the real us, it gives us form, it makes us into who we are. And that's why the menorah, which we light on Hanukkah, is to bring out the Ur. We know that in the metaphor of the of light, of Ur. Ur is Torah, ki ner mitzvah, the Torah Ur. The Torah is supposed to be our light. Hanukkah is a celebration of the fact that we have the Torah and the Torah can transform us so much more than just being a guf, because really we are a neshama. One very quick thought to finish is that the word Yavam is symbolic of chokhmah, of logic, of what they were trying to extol in the Greek culture. And you have the yud, which is a dot, and then you have a logical progression from that. You have a yud, and then a slightly longer vav, and then you have a slightly longer nun. It seems like a progression, there's a logic to this. And we say, yeah, that's very nice, it's very nice to have a chokhmah. But if the chokhmah doesn't turn you into the real you, into the ultimate you, so then there's nothing to it. And we say we need to add we need to make the Torah have an effect. We allow the Torah to have an effect on us. We add the letter tzadi, which represents the tzadik, to the beginning. And we have tzion, tzion mishkan kvodecha. We have, when you have a tzadik and you have someone who's able to internalize the chokhmah, you transform Yavon into tzion, into the Beis HaMikdash, the whole avodah which happened in the Beis HaMikdash, which was restarted. That's what we got, because we were able to say that we're lighting the menorah, we're able to bring the light of Torah into this world. We can say that when we learn and when we have these rules, it's not just about the guf, it's about allowing the Torah to form us into who we ultimately are. And through that we should be zoicher to the ultimate chayrus, the chayrus of engraving, that the laws of the Torah should engrave us into the ultimate people who we really can be. I wish you all a lichtige Chanukah.